Morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 37. Satnam rajastama iti trivite kamado.
Satnam rajastama iti trivite kamado.
Sutram ahannam iti pravadanti jivam.
Sutram ahannam iti pravadanti jivam.
Jnana kriyarta palarupatayaru shakti.
Jnana kriyarta palarupatayaru shakti.
Brahmai vabhati sarasat chakayo paramya.
Brahmai vabhati sarasat chakayo paramya.
Satvam.
Satvam.
Goodness.
Goodness.
Raja.
Raja.
Passion.
Passion.
Amma.
Amma.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus known.
Thus known.
Vibrit.
Threefold.
Ekam.
Ekam.
One.
Aro.
Aro. In the beginning.
In the beginning.
Sutram.
Sutram.
The power to act.
The power to act.
Maham.
Maham.
The power of consciousness.
The power of consciousness.
Aham.
Aham.
False ego.
False ego.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Prabhadanti.
Prabhadanti.
Is called.
Is called.
Jivam.
Jivam.
False ego.
False ego.
Which covers the living entity.
Which covers the living entity.
Jnana.
Jnana.
The embodiment of knowledge.
The embodiment of knowledge.
Kriya.
Kriya.
The senses.
The senses.
Artha.
Artha.
Sense objects.
Sense objects.
Pala.
Pala.
Sweet results.
Sweet results.
Upataya.
Upataya.
Performs.
Performs.
Guru Shakti.
Guru Shakti.
Great varieties of energy.
Great varieties of energy.
Brahma Eva.
Brahma Eva.
The Supreme Alone.
The Supreme Alone.
Bhati.
Bhati.
Manifest.
Manifest.
Sat Asat.
Sat
Asat. As God grows objects and their subtle causes.
As God grows objects and their subtle causes.
Tayo.
Both.
Param.
Param.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Yat.
Yat.
Which is.
Which is.
Translation. Originally one, the absolute Brahman, comes to be known as threefold, manifesting itself as the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Brahman further expands its potency, and thus the power to act and the power of consciousness become manifest, along with the false ego, which covers the identity of the conditioned living being. Thus, by the expansion of the multipotencies of the Absolute, the demigods as the embodiment of knowledge become manifest, along with the material senses, their objects, and the results of material activity, namely happiness and distress. This way, the manifestations of the material will take place as a subtle cause and as a material effect visible in the appearance of gross material objects. Brahman, which is the source of all subtle and gross manifestations, is simultaneously transmitted to them, the Absolute. Therefore, in the previous verse, the sage, Vipalayana described the Absolute, Brahman, as being beyond the range of material sense perception and mental speculation. At the same time, it was stated, Atma Mulam Atoktam Ahayam Viti Na Nisheda Siddhi. The negative injunctions of the Vedas indirectly indicate the existence of the Absolute Truth. This Absolute Truth can be approached by correct means. In the present verse, it is clearly described that the Absolute Truth possesses innumerable potencies, Guru Shakti Brahmaiva Vati. Thus, by the expansion of the Absolute Truth, the gross and subtle features of the material world become manifest. As stated by Srila Sridhar Swami, Kariyam Kananab Ninam Nabhavati. The result is not different from, therefore, since the Absolute is eternal existence, this material being the potency of the Absolute can also be accepted as real, while the various manifestations of the material, the temporary and thus illusory, the material should be understood to consist of the bewildering interactions of real elements. true world is not false in the imaginary sense of the Buddhists and the Mahayanis, who state that in fact the true world does not exist outside the mind of the observer. The true world as the potency of the absolute has real existence, but the living entity becomes bewildered by attempted manifestations. Again, another very long purpose. Maybe maybe 8 pages of purport. So we don't have time to read everything. But I'll just glean a few of the points of Krishna Ridananda Maharaj's and his assistants are taken from the commentaries of the Acharyas in this particular verse. And these verses are very important, philosophically, they're very, very important. Otherwise the Acharyas wouldn't have given so much commentary. Now we find that this is a conversation that is related by Narada Muni to Vasudeva, of the discussion between Maharaj Nini and Yogendras. And the Yogendras, from what we have explained here, there were some of the 9 Yogendras were 9 sons of Lord Rishabh. Of course, Bharat Maharaj is very famous as the first son of Lord Rishabh Dev, and of course he had 100 sons. And these 9 are also very, very advanced. Pippalaya, Kavi Havi, I think they mentioned earlier on the names of these 9 sons of. There's 81 mentioned that they became very expert in the different ceremonies and the shrutis and so on and so forth. So practically we understand that all the sons of Lord Rishabh, because Lord Rishabh himself is the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all his sons are very qualified, very elevated. Maharaj is very famous. In fact, the earth was named after him. Maharaj Vaishnava before was known by another name, Adinami Varsha. But then after Bharat, then it became known as Bharat Varsha. So Lord Rishabh, Nayan Dehol, Bhajamjoki, Kastam, Manavi, Buddhavi. Lord Rishabh gives many instructions to his sons. He says, don't engage in the world like the animals, like the dogs and the hogs. They are performing tapasya. You perform tapasya for the spiritual enlightenment. Get the pleasure from spiritual enlightenment. Not to work hard like dogs and hogs, for meager pleasures. This is the essence of the instruction of Lord Vishnu. And now we see that all the sons are very elevated. Now, I seem to remember that some of these sons are living in the higher planets. Even today, Pippalaya and they're living on the Tapaloka. The Tapaloka, there is many sages like the Kumaras, they are living even today on the Tapaloka, which is higher than even the heavens. There are planetary systems higher than the heaven, higher than the Svarga, Indra and all the Devas, and then higher than Mahaloka, Jan, Tapaloka, Satan, and Ramaloka, like they're higher. But these sages are living. They're in practicing the tapasya, doing the meditation, and doing various activities and all ceremonies and yagyas and homas and all sorts of things like that. They're living. So they're now giving a good instruction to Maharaj Nini, and that's Maharaj Nini is telling Vasudeva. Vasudeva apparently, although the father of Krishna, was very bewildered at the policy of the, or the position of Krishna. So Narada Muni explains to him very philosophical, quoting from presentation of the Lineage, which is very philosophical. Vasudeva, the father Krishna, was very philosophical, very intelligent. When his sister, where he was going for the wedding, when Kamsa's sister was. Vasudeva and Devaki, they were going for the wedding in the chariot, constantly driving, and the voice came from the sky, you're driving the chariot, but you don't know that the eighth child will kill you. Kamsa immediately took hold of his sister's hair and wanted to kill him. And Vasudeva was able to convince him, somehow stop him, by his speech. He was a very logical, very philosophical, and somehow or other, a very asura like Kamsa was able to be pacified by Vasudeva. So we can understand that Vasudeva is very philosophical. So Narada really, being a very expert preacher, knows how to speak to various different types of people. But we see here, interestingly, that Narada Muni is presenting the philosophical explanations of the Yoginis to Maharaj Muni, to Narada is presenting to Vasudeva. He knows Vasudeva can understand these things. Right? Very, very intelligent, very philosophical. Not many, particularly in Kali Yuga, not many people are actually very philosophical. To study philosophy these days in the university or something is a very, very rare course. You know, because it used to be more popular in the past generation. But now if someone studies the philosophy, maybe it has to be as part of some other kind of course they're doing. They have to, they're forced to do that or something like that. Very few major in the philosophy. If you're a very intellectual person, you have to study all the various teachings of contemporary philosophers and the past philosophers. It's very arduous and very painstaking to go through. You have to have a mind that can fathom those types of things. It's not only fathom, but is interested in and enthused by that type of thing. Very intellectual. You have to have a very intellectual mind. So not many people today are Kali Yuga. But in the former times, people were more intellectual, more philosophical. And especially Vasudeva was very philosophical. So here we get the presentation of, I think it was mentioned that one by one the Yogendras are speaking. They have very great elevated devotees, as was mentioned yesterday, very, very elevated devotees. They speak on all different aspects of all the position of Krishna, the energies of Krishna. Now, in this verse, how the world comes about, in a very kind of a general way, how the sequence of events as far as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's a part of the Brahman, and then from the Brahman, which is one indivisible energy, it becomes actually, in a sense, divided, but not actually divided, it's all within the Brahman, all the energy is working in different ways. Here it is mentioned that the absolute Brahman, originally one, comes the modes of material nature. Brahman, you have the pradana, the unmanifested stage of the material energy, and from that becomes manifest, and then from the manifest. The more description is given in other shastras also. Here a general description is given. You read Brahma Samhita also by Lord Brahma. There's a good description there. And the commentaries of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he elaborates greatly on the sequence of events of the how everything is coming in the world. So somehow or other, these modes of material nature, and namely the Sattva-guna, the Raja-guna, and the Tamaguna are coming from the original Brahman. Now, one can understand Brahman in various ways. Brahman, sometimes Brahman can just mean the one effulgence, the light that is in Brahman. Sometimes Brahman is referred to as all the aspects. It is all Brahman, namely the energy, the Paramatma, and Param Brahman. Sometimes it all can be said that is all Brahman. But one should conclude that beyond Paramatma, beyond the Bhagavan, there is just Brahman. Because sometimes Brahman is presented in that way, in the Veda and different Upanishads and things like that. Brahman is there is Brahman, and then so within the Brahman, there's all these other aspects, but they're just temporarily manifested. Even the Bhagavan, even the form of any form. localized or extended, that is a temporary manifestation. In the end, all that exists is the Brahman. So sometimes we read like that. But we should understand clearly, especially those in the Kali Yuga, to understand these deep philosophical concepts. It cannot be done with the blunted material intellect, mind, and senses. Not possible. And therefore, this was mentioned in the previous verse. And also described in the Gita. One has to understand this absolute truth, whether it is known as Bhagavan, or Paramatma, Brahman, or however it is known, by the correct means, as mentioned here, by the correct means. You cannot with your own senses. Especially in Kali Yuga. Now, in Kali Yuga, it is said that the living entities in the Kali Yuga, they are the very sinful ones who their desires weren't fulfilled in the other ages they take birth here in the Kali Yuga. And the Kali Yuga is meant especially to get the karma for the sinful activities. In the previous ages, there were some that were sinful, they had to get their some reactions. But in the Kali Yuga, everyone is acting very sinfully. Therefore, it is the age of the sinful activities and the age of the reactions to those sinful activities. Those living in, they take birth in the Kali Yuga. So they're not very qualified to understand the higher subject matters of the absolute truth, especially very intricate, specific philosophical concepts. So it is said that for the people of the Kali Yuga, they have to understand correctly, and to understand correctly, for them they have to approach the bona fide guru. Very, very important. Otherwise, the statements of the Veda, the different sutra, Brahma Sutra, or Upanishad, all these things, they will never be able to understand them. Not properly. Some understanding may be there, but some misunderstanding can also be there. It's like in the material world, and here in this purport, it's a very good explanation is given. This point of it, just like in the material world, you have those who study the Veda and the Shastras trying to understand. Maybe they understand some things, they are going to misunderstand other things. So too in this world, you have the materialists, scientists, and so on, who research, experiment, and try to understand certain things. They'll understand some things, and they'll misunderstand other things. Actually, even, and it's explained here, even this material world, the energies of this world, cannot be understood from the mundane position. When we speak of Brahman and all the aspects of Brahman, even the energies and the goings on of the material world cannot be understood by the tiny minds of the materialists. And they're trying and doing different things, and they will be successful. They're trying to go to the space, and they're going to the moon, they're going to the other planetary systems, trying to understand. They're sending the rocket ships now. I've read something that they're trying to build one there, like an elevator to a platform in space. I remember, wasn't it, Ravana tried to build a stairway to the heaven? So this was attempted previously. Now I've read one article where the scientists and the engineers and all the different people, they're trying to, because to go into the outer space, they're putting their satellites and so many things. And then to go to the outer space, they have to go by the rocket. And just to get out of the Earth's atmosphere, it takes so much energy, because the gravity pull and everything like that. So, and the high temperatures and everything, so so much fuel, so much energy, so much money is spent. So now, so most of it is to get out of the Earth's atmosphere. Once they get in the outer space, they say, then it's not so difficult. But to go out of the atmosphere of the Earth. But now they're talking that we'll build one, not exactly, although some scientists have talked about making some sort of elevation, some platform in the middle of the ocean. They're talking about making some platform in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And then making some big cable. And they're going to build some big cable that goes up to a platform above the Earth's atmosphere. And on that cable, they're going to be able to transport all the different satellites and everything like that. Get in the rocket, and which costs us so much money every time it flies just to make it, everything like that, and so much damage is there. They want you to have a platform, and then from there they can go to the outer space and then explore the different planets and things like that. And they're saying, first of all, they have to get the cable, they have to think about this very careful, how to suspend the cable a long distance high. And so they need the cable that is, you know, like 20 times stronger than the steel or whatever. So they're thinking maybe in 10 years or 20 years. But even if they do, still these things were attempted before. And still, even if they go and make the platform and then they put their satellites over there and go to the other planets, I want to understand actually of even this small universe that we're living in. It takes so much endeavor to just to put the platform above the Earth's atmosphere. They're thinking, scratching their heads. So much money is needed, what cable, and then something will go wrong, they put the cable and then the snap or something. So many people will lose their lives. Even making a bridge takes so much effort. You know, when they made this Westgate, for example, they first made, were making this Westgate bridge that everyone goes over and out takes for granted. But they were making, there was some big accident in the middle. They came in both sides, they were put in the middle piece, and then something happened, and all the men were inside doing everything. How many people like, fell to the middle? 100 or 200 people were inside working, had fell down, so many people were killed. Even making buildings and making bridges, sometimes you read that they're making the big skyscrapers and some people fall off. And, you know, I know in America the Empire State Building, you know, 50 men lost their lives making that. Make the tunnels through the under the ground, so many people lost their lives. So even these things, engineering, you know, making the tunnel or making the bridge or making the big building, going to the into the the space. So much effort, and what they can understand, even if they go there, what they can understand. You need someone to explain things to you. Just like if you go to the foreign country, if you don't know anything, you're walking around, what can you understand? But if you go with someone who takes you on the tour, who knows everything in the city, oh, they know this is this place. But if you just go, even you see it, what you can understand? What does it mean, that thing? You're a foreigner, what do you know about that place? But if so, you go on with someone who knows, oh, this place is, oh, this is what they do there, oh, now I understand. Hmm? Or even they go to the other planets and then they see, what can they understand? What they actually see with their eyes, and what they can understand, how the thing is going on in that planetary system. So, it's not possible, not to speak of planets, how the energies are moving. So there's some energies moving, as mentioned here. It's very nicely explained. So the scientists these days, they're studying the effects of the world, but they don't understand. They know, and I think it's logic. Mere logic cannot explain how even material objects expand their potency. Mere logic cannot explain. So here is a nice thing. These things can be understood by mature observation. And explained by someone who had the realization of these things. And this is further explained further on. And Shugoshan explains that we can understand the power of a valuable gem not by logical statements, but by observing the effect of the gem. An interesting example. Also going on. Similarly, one can understand the potency of a mantra by observing its power to achieve a particular effect. Logically, how do we understand what is a mantra? Radhe Krishna mantra, any mantra, ritualize everything. How do you understand that? Do you see the effect of it? Why? Because you cannot understand with your mind and intelligence. You may be the most intelligent person, still will not understand it. Do you see the effect of it? Another example is given here. Going on back to the mantra, by observing its power to achieve particular effects, such potency doesn't depend on so-called logic. So, in other words, it has its own power, the gem has its own power, the mantra has its own power, and it's having its power whether you understand it or not understand it. It doesn't have its power because you understand it now it's got its power. It has its power even before you understood it. It has its own power. And you will never fully understand, just like the sun. The sun, whether you understand how the sun has its energy, how that energy goes on, it is going on. I mean, the scientists have theorize and have their theories about the sun and the energy of the sun and all. Apart from their theories, apart from their logic, the sun has its own energy and is going on in its own way. That's a good point. Also, another example is given here. There's no logical necessity for a seed growing into a tree. Why these things are going on? Okay, now this is a good point. And give you fruits that nourish the human body. One may argue that the genetic code for the entire tree is contained within the seed. Right. Okay, the seed is there. And how it becomes a tree? Well, okay, the scientists explain, well, because of the genetic code, the DNA is in the seed, in the small form of the seed. So that's how it happens. But there's no logical explanation why it should happen. It happens, but why should it happen? Why should the tree give the seed? Later on becomes another tree. Okay, the scientists explain, well, this is how it happens, but why does it happen? There's no logical explanation. Oh, well, they might offer some sort of explanation. Well, because of the necessity to propagate and to continue the species, therefore it's going on. But why does it need to continue the species? Isn't it? Some of you think about these things sometimes. Just like, you know, when sometimes you see the documentaries on the animal species and things like that, where, you know, the deer gives birth to the baby deer, and the baby comes out, and then immediately the baby goes and sucks the nipple of the mother and gets the milk from the mother. How it knows these things. Oh, one can say, oh, it's in the genetic code, therefore it knows these things. And then the mother feels affection and it wants to care for that baby. Yes, because it's in the genetic, but why is it in the genetic? Isn't it? Why is it there? You can explain how, maybe not, maybe you're explaining, your explanation may be true, or maybe not true, maybe there's a mistake there, but anyway, say if it is, it's in the genetic code. But why? Why is it? It's in the genetic code that the mother has affection for the baby. Is that part of DNA? Is affection part of DNA? Or maybe someone will explain like that. But even if it is, why? See, that's the point that's made here. I may argue that the genetic code of the entire is contained in the seed, but there's no logical necessity for the existence of the seed. Why? Why does the mother care for that particular deer and not the other deers? There's so many baby deers. Why that one? Right? That's the logical explanation. Oh, because it's its own baby. Yes, but you know, the birth of the baby is causing a lot of pain to the mother. You think that after so much pain it'll run away and doesn't want to know about that baby anymore. that'd be logical, wouldn't it? that'd actually be more logical. Someone who gives you a lot of pain, generally you don't really want to go away from that person, right? You don't want to come near that person. That would be more understandable and logical. But here we have something that is actually a little bit illogical. Giving birth to the baby causes so much pain to the mother, but the mother is so loving to the baby. You think you want to throw the baby out the window. Right? Or you know, the baby is crying and screaming and wanting to eat and someone giving so much trouble. What's the logical explanation for still loving and caring that baby, isn't it? Logical explanation. If you would take emotion out of the whole thing and just have pure intellectual logic, there's no logical explanation. Oh, it's in the DNA, in the genetic code. Is it? Well, I mean, if you break down the DNA and everything. It's just like all these solutions and chemicals and things like that. Where do you find affection in there? I mean, they can explain it like that, but you don't find affection in just a bunch of chemicals. DNA is all just made up of all these different things, right? So how's it all live? So this is a good point, maybe actually. There's no problem necessity for the existence of the sea, nor for the seed expanding itself in the gigantic tree. Well, this is how it's done, but why does it do it? To keep the species going. Why? Why does the species need to keep going? Why does the species need to keep going? That's a very good question, isn't it? The species needs to keep going back where the seed's there, therefore that's why it's there. But why does it have to do that? What is the big thing of keeping the species going? Why does every species in the world have to keep, have to keep going? Somehow or other, it just does it. There's no logical explanation. Actually, it's an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know the answer. It's an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that the living entities can fulfill their desires in a certain type of way. So therefore, Krishna has all these things created. So he puts the living entities in the different forms of life to experience and fulfill the desires in various different types of ways. So this is the explanation. This is the answer to the why. Whereas the scientists, they're just studying the effect. They're studying the effect, and they think they understand some of these. So here it is said, there's no logical necessity ex post facto or after the manifestation of the wonderful material nature. Foolish material scientists trace out the expansion of the seed's currency in the apparent logical sequence of events, but there's nothing within the realm of so-called pure logic to dictate that a seed should expand into a tree. That's more saying what we were just explaining. Rather, such expansion can be understood to be the potency of the tree. Simply, the potency of the jewel is its mystic power, and various mantras also contain innate potency. Ultimately, the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, has the potency to transfer one to the spiritual world of bliss and knowledge. In the same way, the Absolute Truth is the natural quality of expanding itself into innumerable varieties of material and spiritual worlds. We may logically describe this expansion after the fact. This is what everyone is doing, after the fact. How it is all happening? Why? And so Prabhupada says that Tata Brahmajigya. So now, in the human form of life, we have to ask why. And they're asking why these things, but it's not. The scientists are asking why, but it's not. They're not actually asking why, they're asking how. More than why. See, how is this? Not why, but how. Why is more philosophical. See? How is more sequence of events, science, engineering? It's just how. And that's what they're doing, actually. Although they may call it why. Why this, why that. But actually, how. But the why is philosophical. And one main philosophical observation of the thing is insufficient to actually understand the thing. Even spiritually, Hantate Katayasyami Yuyatakushi, Nastanto Vistara Shiva, Krishna tells Arjuna, Vistana Yoga Vibhuti Chandra. Arjuna asks, please describe your energies, I want to know how everything comes. And Krishna answers, yes, I will tell you, but only of some, because my potency is unlimited, you will not understand. Even someone who is advanced, Krishna said, even from the very now, he will not be able to understand everything. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can actually understand everything, and if he so desires, can he empower someone to understand what that person needs to understand. So even on the spiritual platform, to understand all these things is not possible for the ordinary, the jiva condition in the world, but even for the jiva, even for the liberated soul, it's not possible to understand these things. But Krishna enlightens someone sufficiently to understand so that they can advance on the spiritual path and purify their consciousness and eventually come to the path of devotional service. So understanding the material world is part and parcel of the jiva clarifying his own position. You know, we have to understand what is the world, to understand and this question is asked by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, in the 8th chapter. Arjuna Uvaja, Kim Tad Brahma Kim Adya, Mam Kim Kama Purushottama, Adi Bhutam Chikim Proktam, Adi Daivam Kim Uchyate. Arjuna inquired, O Lord, what is Brahma? What is the sun? What are the food activities? What is the material manifestation? What are the demigods? Please explain these things to me. So Arjuna was asking these questions. So, one of the conditioned soul, these questions have to be asked and have to be answered. And Krishna begins to answer, starting here in the 8th chapter, these questions of Arjuna. Interesting story, actually. So we should, understand Brahman in this way. As Arjuna asks the question, Krishna gives the explanation. And even asking the question so asking these types of questions is the sign of intelligence. The how, some sign of intelligence, how the DNA, the genetic code, someone has to be intelligent. But it's actually called superficial intelligence. It's superficial intelligence means just on the surface intelligence. Just on the surface. Yes, intelligence is needed to understand, how to make the bridge, how to make a road, how to make the building, how to make the tunnel, research, medicine. Intelligence, but it's all on the surface. You have to go deeper. Deeper means these questions. This is deeper intelligence. Other intelligence is just superficial. Deeper intelligence is this. The other intelligence is more how do you understand? And this is why. And there was one story in the Gita Mahatmya where there's this Lord Shiva speaks to Parvati, and he tells one story. There was one Brahman, his name was Babashan, but he wasn't acting like a Brahman. He was very materialistic, and he was addicted to meat eating, and especially drinking wine. He liked to drink a lot of wine. This one time he went to some function, he was drinking so much wine, and he liked to drink that date palm wine. He was drinking so much, he was just unconscious with the wine that was coming out of his mouth, just on the lying down. And he actually contracted the dysentery from drinking so much wine. He got the dysentery, chronic dysentery. And he later on, after some time, he died. And his next life, he became a date palm tree. So I like a date palm wine so much later, I became a date palm tree. So he was living as a date palm tree, and after some time, two Brahma Rakshasas came under that tree. They were like Brahma Rakshasas, type of gods. Formerly they were Brahmins, and they became the Bhutis, and they're known as the Brahma Rakshasas. This story is also interesting, that Lord Shiva also tells their story, that they were Brahmins, but they were both husband and wife, the husband and wife actually, and they became Brahma Rakshasas on the guy. But they were very mean, very stingy, very cruel to people. They weren't acting like Brahmins also, they weren't acting like Brahmins. Mean, cruel, stingy, and cheating, and all these types of things. So at the end of their life, they died, and they became Brahma Rakshasa. They came under the tree, because we know that the Buddhas, they very much like living in trees. So they came under that tree. And that's Baba Sharma. Some sort of benediction that he could remember his former life, even if he was in the tree. So he was there, living in the tree, and they came underneath, and the wife, she spoke to the husband, and she said, oh, I'm very tired of being Brahma Rakshasa. How long do we have to live like this? How will we be free from the curse of being the Brahma Rakshasa? She spoke to her husband. She asked her husband. And the husband said, we are suffering the reactions of our sinful activities. They remember their former life also. And to be free, then one has to know, you know, what is Brahman, what is the self, what is this world, these things. Then you can be free. Then you'll be liberated. So she asked a question. She said, asked her husband. And she actually, when she asked the question, she inadvertently quoted the first half of the first verse of the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. She said, Chintat Brahma Chinyatya. Mam Chintama Puchitama. Because they were Brahmanas in a form of life, so they, you know, knew the Sanskrit and everything. And when she asked the question, when the husband told her, you have to know Brahman, you have to know the self, you have to know the world, the activities, she's asking about what are these things? And when she asked back, she recited the same thing Arjuna, the same question Arjuna asked to Krishna. So because of that, all of a sudden, there was a loud bang sound, and the tree fell over. The tree fell over, and Baba Shama, who was in the form of the tree, regained his former position as Brahmana, free from all the sinful reactions. He was very astonished. What happened? And not only that, but a short time later, he saw Vimana coming from the sky, and these two Rama Rakshasas were taken inside by Vishnu Dudas and taken back to Vaikuntha. They were very astonished. And he said that there must be the recitation of this song. This mantra, he understood a little bit also, he was also a Brahmin from before. She said, this is from Bhagavad Gita. So he took that, even though it was half a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, he took it and he went to, where did he go? He went to Kashi, which Kashi is now the Varanasi. So he went there and he was practicing tapasya, and every day, reciting this verse in order to understand Krishna, to understand. So he was doing this for the rest of his life, like that. In the Vaikuntha, Lakshmi was with Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was resting, and all of a sudden he got up from his sleep, and Lakshmi was a bit startled. Well, why have you got up all of a sudden? And Lord Vishnu said, I've been observing one devotee of mine. He is there in Kashi. He is performing tapasya. He is reciting even a half sloka from Bhagavad Gita. Every day I've been thinking how to reward him. So as he was thinking, Baba Shama was there. All of a sudden, another Pushpa Vimana came for him. Vishnu Dudas came out, put him into, he went to the Vaikuntha and became a very close associate of Lord Vishnu and serving him every day. Lord Shiva was telling the story to his wife Parvati. And then the effect of even chanting half a sloka from the Bhagavad Gita. Half a sloka. That the two Brahma Rakshasas, they were liberated. And Baba Shama did like that, and he became a very close associate of the Supreme Lord. So these are a very important thing. So these types of questions have to be asked and understood. And the way to understand is to, for us in the Kali Yuga, and this I think is mentioned here. In some part of the purport I remember reading, or maybe it was a previous one. But one has to understand these things by approaching the conditions of Kali Yuga, can't understand by himself. He can't understand by himself. You have to approach the bona fide guru. And then by hearing from the guru, then one begins to understand what are these things. What is the Brahman? What is Bhagavan? What is Paramatma? What is this world? What is the karma? It's like these questions are asked here by Arjuna. What is Brahman? What is the self? What is the fruit of activities? What is the Lord of Sack? How does he live in the body? How can we engage in devotional service? How those engaged in devotion can know you at the time of death, that these questions were asked by Arjuna. And then the Lord begins to describe the indestructible, transcendent living entity is called Brahman. So here we find the word Brahman used to describe the Atma. He is also Brahman. The energy is Brahman. Bhagavan is also often referred to as Brahman. But we have to understand. We have to understand very carefully the different specifics of all that. Yes, Jiva is like Brahman because he is the spiritual part of the energy. He is like the fire and the sparks, and he is the spark. So he is the same quality as the fire. In that way he is known as Brahman. Paramatma is the supreme, he is the fire in a very small way within each one of us. He is also Brahman. Bhagavan, he is Brahman, but the energy that is another coming from the personality. So these things are explained by great acharyas, by the guru. And then the devotee can understand it correctly. Beyond Brahman, there is the Prabhupada explained. But beyond the energy, there is Paramatma, and there is Parambrahma. Parambrahma refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are all very philosophical. And here, now, Yasat Prabha Prabhavato Jagananda Koti. Here is quoted from the Brahma Samhita. Just as it is understood from the above discussion that the material world is an emanation from the impersonal Brahman potency of the Lord, Brahman itself is an expansion of the potency of Krishna, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Brahman hi Pratishtham. Then, Prabha Prabhato Jagananda Koti Kotishva Shesha. Pasudari Vimuti Bhinam, Tad Brahma Nishkaram, Ananta Mashesha Bhutam. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out about the impersonal Brahman. There is neither transcendental activity nor supreme Pumarata or benefit of human life. Now this is one aspect of the supreme, but it's not still Bhakti Siddhanta begins to describe, alright, the Brahman, the energy, but it's not the total perfection. Because the Brahman does not have transcendental activity. Nor is there prema, love. If someone can elevate to Brahman, but there's no activity, just existence. And there's no prema, there's no love. So therefore, it is not fully perfect. It's perfection, but not fully perfection. So therefore, just will actually come to know that someone who is prematurely dazzled by the expansion of the Lord. Bodily polish is known as Brahman, therefore does not actually come to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no possibility of actually understanding one's eternal identity. So if one goes to Brahman, it's not fully, you're not fully understanding your own identity. Not fully. If you understand Brahman, even you have the quality of Brahman yourself, still there is more. Still there is more to understand. This is the point that's made here very strongly by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And if you go to his purports on Brahma Samhita, you can read an elaborate explanation of what is our position. You are Brahman, yes, you have the quality of Brahman, you are Brahman, there is the effulgence Brahman, you can exist within the effulgence, but you don't fully understand your position yet. There is more. But someone who stops just as Brahman being dazzled by the effulgence of the light, that is described here as premature. Don't stop there yet. There's more. You have to go further. And what is that further? That is yourself in your relationship with the Supreme Personality of God, Sambandha, Abhideya Sambandha, Prayojana, you know, all these things. Your relationship. And then prema. These things have to be understood very, very carefully. Atasu Krishna Nama Rinda Bhavakana Mindaya Seva Mukhi Diva Svayam Eva Spura Tidha. With your material blunt senses, you cannot understand even this world, what to speak of Brahman, but when your senses are purified by following the order of the Guru, engaging in the service of the Guru, very nicely, knowledge is imparted to you, then you can begin to understand. The knowledge will come from within. You will be enlightened from within. From without you cannot know. From within you can know. But from without, in one sense, you can know by the instruction of the Guru. But when I say without, I mean by your external senses. You cannot know. Not possible. That's like, I remember that there's one story of the Vice Chancellor of the Varanasi. Banaras University at that time, he wanted to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He wanted to ask him some questions. And he came before Srila Bhaktivedanta and said, oh, Bhaktivedanta said, yes, please can you, we can ask these other devotees, these Bhujaris, everything, they can answer. No, no, these are very intricate questions on the Vedanta, they will not be able to answer. No, no, you just ask them, you see, they will answer. So he was a bit submissive, so he went to the Pujari, they said, just now we're doing the paraphernalia, after we finish, then we'll answer your questions. So in the meantime, he also did some service. He was helping to polish the paraphernalia, everything like that. But then he came back to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, did your questions were answered? He said, strange thing, I was there doing the paraphernalia, and then all the answers to my questions that came in my own mind. I didn't have to ask the question anymore. And he said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, it was at that time, he said, yes, my Guru Maharaj used to tell me what it means. He said, my Guru Maharaj used to say, Atasya Krishnanama, Nathapatyanagin, Seven Guru, Svayamis. Not by your blunt senses, but by when your senses are purified through service to Krishna. Then you'll begin to ask, then everything will be revealed to you. Your puny mind, you may be the greatest scholar, the greatest brain, whatever. You know, like Einstein is considered a great brain. You think he admitted. He said, the more I know, the more I realize that there is to be known. This is he admitted. The more I learn and understand, I realize there's so much more to be known. So he was saying he can't cut it. Even the greatest brains of the century cannot understand. So he cannot. So it's a question of subordinating yourself to someone actually in a superior position of realization. And of course, people in Kali Yuga aren't able to do that. They don't like to subordinate themselves. Especially on giving a lecture at the Tribune University, especially in mode of ignorance and mode of passion, also a little bit, and very proud, arrogant, mode of ignorance especially, doesn't like to follow any authority. He wants to be authority. Doesn't like to, whether it's spiritual authority or even material authority, doesn't like to follow. He doesn't like to be told to do this. Someone tells him to do this, he doesn't like it. He wants to tell others, but of course he wants to tell someone else what to do. But he doesn't like to be told what to do. And this is very much, of course, now in Kali Yuga, is very much like a ignorance. The mind of ignorance is very everywhere, very powerful. Ignorance and passion, especially. So no one likes to subordinate, but you have to subordinate yourself. Either voluntarily or by force. Voluntarily do it. Surrender yourself to the instruction of the Guru and subordinate. Voluntarily you do it, that's intelligence. Then you learn, not blind following, you're asking questions. But then in the material world, you forcibly, even in work, you think people like, they have to go to work and the boss tells them to do this, do you think they like it? No, but they have to subordinate themselves, otherwise they won't have the job, they won't get paid. But they're forcibly subordinated in so many ways in the world. Either you're forcibly subordinated or you voluntarily accept subordination. And this is the only way. But you have to subordinate yourself to the right, in the right way. Not just to anything and everything. In the right way, to the right persons. To the acharyas, to the gurus, to Krishna. These ones we subordinate ourselves. And then we learn in this way. We need to understand these things. What is the Brahman? What is this? How the world is coming, Brahman, and then the modes, then from the modes and all these other things are coming, a false ego, which is covering the living entity, that is expanded, all the different things there, the senses, from the false ego, the senses and the objects of the senses and the activities, and then you have the happiness and distress because of these things, one thing after the other. It's not so easy, it's not so difficult to understand once you situate yourself on the path of transcendental knowledge. Not so difficult. Of course, still, even devotees, when you start speaking too philosophically, the tendency is to, the mind wanders off all over the place. I was watching a DVD somewhere, I forget where it was. We also have a DVD of Prabhupada here in the temple here. In the opening of the temple here. I wasn't here, I was in New Zealand. I see Prabhupada in India, but I wasn't here for the actual, I think it's 75, I wasn't here. But I saw it, and Prabhupada was speaking, and the camera was around the room. And we see the people in the devotees are just pointing the camera. I remember one lecture that I was listening to, and Prabhupada was speaking in Los Angeles. And Prabhupada said, "This Krishna concept is so nice. You just have to chant Hare Krishna, so blissful. Everyone can do it, all the devotees would die, Prabhupada. And then just take prasadam, die, Prabhupada. Just dancing and ecstasy, die, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "Still you cannot do it." To go out for the materialistic activities. Another 30 minutes. Still you cannot do it. Can you then? Still you cannot do it. Some devotees ask me, how do we do these things? Just do these things. How do we do it? That's like the, you know, someone, you know, the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, the man in the well, he falls in the well, he's calling out, crying, "Help, help, get me out." Or someone throws him in the boat. Then how do I take the rope? Just take the rope. How do I take the rope? Put my hand, take the rope. How do I put my hand? Just put your hand. Don't ask foolish questions. So does anyone have any question or comment? Why did they become?
Yes.
Because they were mean and stingy and cheating, and they became Buddhas. They had to be punished in that. They were punished in that way. Any reason? Well, that's the reason that was given by Lord Shiva. In that story, he says he gives the reason because they were like this. Therefore, they had to be punished. They became Brahmanakshas.
But then when the lady recited the verse, why didn't she and her husband get liberated?
What, say again?
You know, when the lady recited the verse, she didn't get liberated, but the tree got liberated? Why is that?
I'm just trying to understand. The
you know, there was the Brahman was
the... There was the Brahman of Kassas.
The
one with the tree, and he didn't immediately get cleaned.
Yes.
He didn't immediately get. Why didn't he immediately get? Is that your question?
No. Right. Why didn't the lady and her husband go? Why didn't they get liberated when they heard the verse and the other
one
got liberated?
Well, they did get liberated. They recited the verse, and it was just a short. Then immediately after that, the tree broke. And he came out and he was in his former position, and then immediately after that, the Vimana came and they went in and then they went back to Vaikuntha. So it was immediately, within just a few moments. This is just how the story is told by Lord Shiva, that the tree broke, he came standing, and as he was looking at them, then all of a sudden he saw the Vimana come, and then they got him and just went. Without further discussion, he just went over very sorry, so he could understand his own. Now, the reason why he didn't immediately also get sometimes that others have extra things they have to do to get the same result. So he had some extra work he had to do to come to the same place. Any other questions? Yes,
at the start of the lecture, you mentioned that the nine stages, they are very highly elevated. They are living on a planet which is higher to the heaven. So, is it still in the material world?
Yeah, yeah.
Then, if they are highly elevated, then why are they serving Krishna? And
well, these highly elevated devotees, sometimes they're doing some service for Krishna. So, they are staying in the world and they are preaching. Mr. Kumaras also. They can come in and out of the world. They're already liberated. You know, when the Kumaras first appear from Lord Brahma, he asked, "Oh, you have to help populate the universe." And no, we don't want to do. We just want to remain Brahmachari. They're already liberated up to the Brahman factor. And so but later on, when they went to the Vaikuntha, they smelt the tulsi on the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, and then they became devotees. So they are staying in the world, instructing, and they are working towards their higher perfection of Krishna consciousness. And also these devotees, they're staying in the world doing some service, and they're also working towards a higher level of their consciousness. So and at the end of their life, unless Krishna wants them to stay a little longer, to do some extra service, some preaching or something like that. But generally at the end of their life they go back home. It's like Lord Brahma, he's very elevated also. At the end of his life he'll go back home. But he has his service to do. You know, everyone has their service to do.
So where
exactly,
if the soul
merged
in the Brahman, where exactly is it situated? If the Lord, you know.
Oh, the Brahman is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. It pervades this world also. But of course, because of the other energy, the Prakriti, that you cannot perceive it with your. But Brahman is the fault, is the Lord, and his effulgence just goes right from the body of Krishna through the Krishna Loka, through the Vaikuntha, through this world, so the Brahmana falls and just spread everywhere, through the spiritual, through the material, it is everywhere. Everything is resting on it. Therefore the description is given, everything rests on the Brahmana, the effulgence of the Lord. And the opportunities they go in there, it is made up, the Brahmana is the effulgence of the Lord, is made up also within there, is the effulgence of the Lord, also the living effulgence is like the living entities they existing, living on the Brahmana as well. So there's both jivas and also effulgence. There's a mix. There's a mix. Banana effulgence is the effulgence of Krishna's body, and also within there is the jivas who are on that platform of banana. So everywhere, spread everywhere. Yes.
Maharaj, is the spiritual world in the life is like this? People live like this? They go to home and they go to see Krishna and they do the daily activities.
Not like people like this, but not like the material life, but the activities, yes. They have got the home and got everything like that, and they go and engage in the according to their position, the Vaikuntha planet or the Krishna Loka, or they have rasa with Krishna, and they, you know, engage in various activities and with themselves and with Krishna and everything, but everything is free from the suffering of the world. There's no suffering. That's just enjoying. Just like if you go on holiday, you've got plenty of money, you just go anywhere you like, you don't have to think of working, you're just enjoying. So there is always enjoyment. Always holiday. You see what?
The resources.
What's diminishing?
Resources.
Oh yeah, but that's this world. And it's meant to happen like that, so Krishna arranges diminishing. Diminishing, you know, then recreating and it's going, changing, always changing. So that's the nature of this world because it's meant to function in a certain way. But in the spiritual world it's not like that. It's always eternal, manifest in so many different ways. The resources are unlimited. This world is also unlimited. Material world is also unlimited. There's a diminishing, again coming, and it's changing. That's the nature of this energy. That's a certain energy working in a certain way. Other energy, that is working differently. It's unlimited. Nobody wants to go to that energy, not this one. This one's inferior. We want to go to superior energy. Transfer from being under the inferior and transfer to go to the superior. That is the goal. You understand? So now we're diminishing all these things, inferior. We have to go to the superior. All glories to Prabhupada. Jai. 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 Jai.